This is Dust to Dust, Don't Cry for Us, a Captain America movieverse fanfic written by Amos Anguisse and read by Rena Jenkins. The story is rated PG-13 and features the pairing James Bucky Barnes, Steve Rogers, with additional tags for Alternate Universe, Werewolves Are Known, Banff Bucky Barnes, Werewolf Bucky Barnes, Werewolf Clint Barton, Werewolf Natasha Romanoff, Werewolf Brock Grumlow, Exploitation of Werewolves, Werewolves Used in War, Nonlinear Narrative, Spoilers for Captain America Winter Soldier, Mystery Creature Steve Rogers, Banff Steve Rogers, Title from a Country Song, Angst with a Happy Ending, Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder. Tag all the things. Wolves are smaller now than they used to be. The first time he sees Clint shift, he has to do a double take. "What is it?" Clint asks, hesitating for half a second before he continues into the Avengers Lounge. "Nothing," Steve answers, looks away, ignoring the way Natasha's eyes track him. It's the first time he notices. It's not that no one shifted in public back in Steve's day. It's just they did it quietly. They did it to enjoy a nap in the afternoon sun in the park or on a roof. Wolves kept a respectful distance from humans. The revelations between the two species still too new, too unstable. But today, everyone is all jumbled together, and Steve has to fight himself whenever he's out with Tony or Bruce, and a shifted civilian wolf comes too close. Tony laughed, said, "You know we can protect ourselves, right?" "I think it's nice," Bruce had countered, as he smiled up at Steve. "Thanks." Sure, Steve answered, frustrated at the off-kilter feeling that was a constant since he'd thawed. He's outside, walking slowly through Central Park. He pushes through the heavy scents and sounds of the city, focuses only on the scent of trees and grass and flowers, listens only to the squirrels and the birds. He settles under a large oak, one that he and Bucky had come to when it was still young. He jerks when a pup comes bounding out of the bushes, yapping excitedly as she dances towards him. She's tossing her head and leaping so that her feet barely touch the ground. It's that gangly, awkward run all puppies have. And she's just so small. Her brothers and parents manage to catch up. The father and one of the boys are human. They're all laughing and out of breath. The mother stills when she sees Steve, caught desperately between wanting to shift and introduce herself and also not wanting to be naked in front of Captain America. He smiles and nods, says, "She's fine, she's adorable." The pup's mother ducks her head and wags her tail, lowering herself to the ground. Steve nods, acknowledging her deferment. Then he turns to the pup, grins wide, and coos ridiculous nonsense he knows the team would give him hell for. Steve had spent his whole life thinking he was human, despite the way Bucky would shake him and yell, "Steve, you're not! I can tell, your scent isn't wolf, but it's something!" Then, after the serum, he told Steve that the scent was stronger now, more potent. Steve grins, leans forward, and says, "I want to show you something, Buck." And then he grabs Bucky's hand and leads him into the midnight forests. "He's so small," Steve scoffs at the wolf on screen, unable to contain his criticism. The team had set him down to watch one of Hollywood's many adaptations of his life. This was supposed to be one of the accurate ones. And it had done well. up until the wolf playing Bucky had shifted. "That's Sebastian Stan," Tony said, whirling on Steve with a righteous fury that blazed hot. "He's one of the largest wolves they've got in Hollywood, if not the largest. And you're saying he's small?"
"He's bigger than I am,"
Clint says, leaning around Natasha so he could look at Steve. His features a mix of hurt and curiosity.
"I'm sorry," Steve says, shrugging. "But Bucky was easily 3 times bigger than that, and he was only a tier 2 wolf."
"Wait, Steve, how big is your wolf?" Tony demands. "I just realized that your file never said. Why not?" Steve looks down and away. He doesn't say anything as he stands and leaves the room, ignoring the way Tony called his name. Despite what he lets his teammates believe, Steve knows how to use the internet. He knows how to tweak certain keywords to get the results he wants from Google. He knows how to navigate Wikipedia. It's less than 5 minutes of searching before he reads, "All Tier 1 and 2 Wolves Drafted for War Effort." It was a headline attached to an article from 1969. Not long after, he finds Time Magazine's 1975 cover. "Gone. What have we done?" The cover photo is grainy and dark. The wolf was covered in dirt and grime, and his foreleg was bleeding. He had his head up to the chest of the soldier whose hands were in his fur as he pressed his forehead to the soldier's chest. The caption at the bottom of the page reads, "The last of the Uberwolves has been killed in action. What this could mean for the wolves at home." A picture from the Time article continues to haunt him, makes his chest heavy. It's 4 photos stitched together, obviously stills from a video, of a wolf, a big one, falling from a helicopter. In the second photo, the shape is indiscernible. In the third, it's a human. In the fourth, the human is disappearing into the trees. The description simply said, "With the helicopter already over its weight limit and under heavy fire, Lieutenant Turrell uses the last of his strength to jump." He wonders if the commandos had fought in Vietnamese jungles, if they would have still been so celebrated. He wonders if a picture of Bucky falling would have ended up in Time, if it would have been called a sacrifice, if they would have said that he jumped. There's a memory scent on the wind when the Winter Soldier first attacks, and Steve curses his mind for choosing now to play its desperate tricks on him. Then there's another attack, and the soldier's muzzle and scent guard is falling away, and it's all Steve can do to not buckle under everything he feels slamming against him. "Bucky?" he asks. And the soldier's eyes widen just a fraction, and his nostrils flare. He's stuck, frozen, as he stares at Steve, before he shakes himself. "Who the hell is Bucky?" he demands, begins to stalk forward. But then Falcon is there, and he kicks Bucky away, and Natasha's grenade explodes at his feet, spiriting him away with the fire and gun smoke. Then the shield agents press in close, the enemy wolves snarling, and they're only just strong enough to get both Steve and Natasha to their knees. Steve wants to yell after Bucky, wants to scream for him to just please remember. "You know me, just remember." Then Rumlow slapping cuffs on him, and Steve snarls, low and guttural, and filled with savage warning. Rumlow and the other wolves recoil on instinct, and before they can move back in, the Winter Soldier has suddenly reappeared. "Steve?" His voice is thick with his own emotion, that undercurrent of a growl the Bucky had always used when he was vying with the other commandos for Steve's attention, even though he knew he always had Steve's attention. "Bucky!" Steve shouts,
Because Rumlow is really pulling at him now, has the cuffs tight and a needle filled with potent wolfsbane already in his neck. And when the soldier sees the needle, he roars, his fangs dropping and his eyes burning bright red. And it's only a blink before the Hydra shield agents have all been savaged. He's soaked with their blood as he kneels next to Steve, murmuring, "Steve, Steve," over and over. The wolfsbane is doing its work, though, so all Steve can do is brush his shaking fingertips against Bucky's cheek, lips, chin, neck, before he loses himself to darkness. When he wakes up, Sam tells him that Bucky was recaptured by his handlers. The serum did more than change his human body. It woke up something inside him. Something old and long forgotten. It's not long before Bucky remembers. Barely a month of Steve and Sam chasing him before Bucky appears in their shared hotel room, his hands shaking and his eyes wide. He looks right at Steve. "Oh, little fox," he says, his voice breaking and his face twisting into something horrible and devastated. "Don't you know you're not supposed to chase wolves?" And Steve is out of his bed and surging forward, and then he's got Bucky in his arms and he pulls him backward until they're crumpled onto each other on Steve's mattress. "I was waiting for the wolf to get his act together," Steve says when they catch their breath. The Ajumawi call him Kwan, the Japanese call him Kitsune, and the name the Moke gave him has long since passed to time. Bucky calls him Little Fox. Steve prefers Bucky's even over all the others, whispered reverently. Even if, when he shifted, Steve's fox takes up all the sky. "And here I thought we were all good friends," Tony spits, his anger getting the better of him, as Steve starts to walk away for a third time. "If it makes you feel any better," Steve says, "Bucky's the only being alive who's seen me fully shifted. And that's only happened once." "And you're gorgeous," Bucky coos from the doorway, taking a step forward to close the distance between them, pressing a soft kiss to Steve's chest. "So are you," Steve says, smiling as he puts his nose in Bucky's hair. "Promise me," Bucky says, his voice desperate and whisper soft as he presses his forehead against Steve's. "Promise me you'll never be so careless with your life ever again." Steve leans down, presses his nose into Bucky's neck, ignores the scent of fire and captivity, ignores the newly underlying tang of something bitter and dark in Bucky's blood. "I promise," he says. They both know it's a lie. Just before they jump for the train and for Zola, Bucky turns to Steve, grabs his arm. "Remember your promise," he says. This time, Steve nods, makes the promise for real with a quick kiss. In his many lives, those remembered and those forgotten, it's the one decision he regrets more than anything else. All of those what-if questions that kept him awake and sobbing late into the night and into the early mornings, they could have all been avoided. But if there was ever one wolf that Steve allowed to control him, it was Bucky. And promises demanded by him were promises to be honored. Wolves are smaller than they ever used to be.
And when Steve sees why, he puts his head in his hands and he screams, feeling the ghosts of sharp winds of a mountain's gale and smelling the ghost scents of a desperate chill of snow and ice. He hears Bucky screaming his name, and he can't help the roar ripping out of his chest. Only this time, when he wakes from his nightmare, Bucky is there. Some days he's more the Winter Soldier than he is Bucky, but he wears Bucky's face, and he carries a twisted version of Bucky's scent. And, well, Steve will take it. The end. Author's notes.
Yay for Fox folklore! So, some background if you're interested. The Achimawi are a Native American tribe from northeastern California. Quan, Silver Fox, and Jamul, Coyote, create the world together and teach people how to live. Kitsune are Japanese tricksters. They're fox spirits that, the older they are, the more tails they have. A nine-tailed kitsune is extremely dangerous and extremely powerful. Ancient Moke people worshipped the fox as a cunning warrior. Because they didn't have a system of writing, the word they used for fox has been lost. If anyone knows it, or maybe the closest approximation, can you let me know? Okay, bringing everything together. Steve is a variation of all of these. He has the power of Quan, the trickster nature of Kitsune, and the cunning warrior mind of the Moke. Yay, Steve!